Today on the Profitable Tradie Podcast.
So we need to do things differently and use a different framework, or otherwise we're not going to crack through that belief, we're not going to crack through this behavior, and we're never going to see any change, which is why we coach and we don't tell. You're banging your head against the wall with your team, telling them again and again to do things differently. You've told them once, you've told them 1,000 times, but nothing seems to change. You're beginning to sound and feel like a broken record.
I know it seems really simple, but people do have brains and they can think, and they're in the job, like they really can like put their brain into action.
Tune into this episode where we unpack how to get your team to change their behavior without all the frustration of endless repetition. All right, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host today, Phil Smith, and I'm here with Cam Hill, our head of coaching. Awesome to have you again, my friend.
What's up, brother?
Yeah, great to have you. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about coaching, not telling. This is something that's going to be pretty fun. It's actually going to go against a bit of your nature, because not your nature, Philly Bowl. Talking about you, the listener, because you want to get results quick. You want your team to listen and do the things that you want them to do. We're going to focus on something that's effective.
Ooh.
But it does take a little bit more time.
It does take a bit more time, but you know, it saves a lot of time down the track. And Cam, I was a little hurt there when you said I was a teller, not a coacher. For those of you that don't know, I'm actually Cam's direct line manager. So yeah, that cut me to the core, man. Like, really hurt my feelings.
Oh, dude. Look, I'm sitting here because you told me to. So. Yeah.
Well, maybe I coached you to. So.
Maybe right. You did. No one will know.
No one will know. All right. Well, I've got a story to kick us off. And basically, this is about my kids. So hopefully, this is going to be pretty relatable to a lot of people. But we have a family member. I'm not going to name them. And this family member, let's just say their house is not very childproof. It's been a long time since these people have had kids. Maybe I was one of them. Let's just put it out there. But it's been a long time since they've had kids. And they've got lots of beautiful little kind of like antique stuff around their house. And there's this one vase or vase. It depends how you say that, what type of the world, part of the world you're in. But this vase, it sits right at about my knee height, which is perfect eye line for my 3-year-old. And every time Franco comes into this person's house, he sees this this vase and he thinks, well, that looks good. I want to touch that. I want to play with that. It looks cool. He wants to put his toys in it, you know, his Paw Patrol stuff, or would go in there very nicely. So he makes a beeline for it every time we go to this house. And every time we go to the house, I feel like I'm telling him, don't touch that. And when I say don't touch that, what do you think he does?
Oh, he wants to touch it with everything that he has.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know when you go to the museum and there's all those signs like, don't touch the exhibition? And you're like,
well, they're asking you to.
I'm going to show you, man. I'm going to touch that exhibition. I'm going to touch that 1,000-year-old mummy. I'm going to do it. Anyway, the point is, it seems like the more I tell him not to touch it, the more he wants to touch it. And I think it's actually the same with your team. You know, like we find with ourselves telling them, you know, do something differently. And really, we have one of two outcomes. Number one is that they actively go against what we said. And it's because we've made this thing off limits and now they want to break the rules. But number two, and this one is actually far more common, is that they actually just don't listen. They barely even hear what we said. They just move on, carry on with their life. And it's not that they're going against what we said. The reality is that they just didn't really take it in the first instance. They didn't get it.
Yeah.
And they just carried on living their life. And unfortunately, it means that we have to say it and say it and say it again. And just like with your kids, when you're doing this and saying something 1,000 times, the frustration builds. You know, the first time you say it, the first time I tell Franco, don't touch that vase, it's, hey, man, don't touch the vase. By the end of it, it's, don't touch the vase. You know, like the tone has changed. And I'm a lot more frustrated. I'm getting pissed off. He's getting pissed off.
Teaches him dad's angry. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, which is not a good situation. No. So what we're going to unpack today is about how to stop just telling and telling and telling and how to actually get some change straight off the bat. So I think if we don't nail this behavior, we run into some big problems. And the first one is that you talk and they don't listen.
Yeah, look, think about when you were a child and your parents were lecturing you about something. I'm sure you can think of about 50 of them straight away. What did you do? You switched off. You forgot everything they said. You likely said, yes, yes, mum, yes, yes, because you just wanted her to stop talking so you could get on with whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I got a fort to build right here.
Yeah. You got whatever you wanted to do. It's like you don't walk away understanding why, and you're not connected to the reason, the bigger picture, whatever, right? And that is the same as your team. Like they're sitting there wanting you to stop talking so they can continue with their job. Like they know that they're busy, they've got things to do, they just want to get on with it, they want to get out of that meeting, they want to get out of talking to you so they can just go back to doing what they were doing. or getting the next pie or smoker. But you know, they're busy, and so they don't get it. So I think it's good to just put yourself in their shoes for a second. No one wants to be just talked at.
Mm. It doesn't. Just think about how this is landing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
100%. And I think the second problem is that they, you know, as a result, they didn't listen. So now they actually don't change. And you start to get really frustrated and you actually lose faith in them as well. So not only does your frustration build, but you start thinking like, man, these guys are just never going to get it. They're never going to get it. These guys are useless. It's not me, it's them.
Yeah.
And this is a negative mindset to be in.
Massively, because you end up putting even less effort in the future. It can go from one guy or two guys to everybody, and now everybody's starting to get the same type of treatment. Like, it can really have this massive ripple effect. So yeah, you don't want to be in that place.
No good. And I think from there what happens is, because you're losing the faith, you actually run into problem number three, which is that you actually stop developing your team at all.
Yeah,
you've built this mindset of like, they're not going to get it. Every time I tell them to do something differently, they don't listen anyway, they don't do it. So what's the point? You throw your hands up in the air and you think they're just never going to get any better, and you don't put any effort into that.
Yeah, look, it means you will never be able to promote anyone. So you wouldn't be able to put any of your team into like a leadership position of any sorts, or a team leader, whatever. You're always hiring external. Like, you're replacing people. Costs money, costs time. It's obviously frustrating. People aren't getting better results. Nobody's growing. And really, it can just lead to some pretty crappy results. Like, if you're not doing a good job of this, margins stay crap. Like, invoicing might be slow, you know, jobs not going to plan, lots of rework. That means you're just bleeding cash and bleeding time. Like, you really bleed both. So, like, man, that's the stuff that keeps you up at night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, end of the day, you're in business because you wanted to make money and you wanted to get freedom, right? Mm. And so, you know, it's money, time, and freedom. And at the end of the day, if you guys won't do anything differently, if they won't improve, if they won't listen, it's very, very hard for you to make money. You know, jobs go sideways. They make the same mistakes again and again. It's very hard for you to get time because no one can develop. No one gets any better. Nothing gets any easier. And so as a result, you need to get the freedom. And you spend your entire life running around, you know, figuratively wiping bums because no one wipes them themselves. And so as a result, like, you know, you're at home wiping bums. You come to work, you're wiping bums. It's just an endless cycle of bum wiping. And you get frustrated and you just stay stuck. And so you're not getting what you want out of your business. You're up late at night worrying about cash flow and jobs going sideways and all these problems. And, you know, really just starting to believe that, you know, your team's useless and there's no one else out there. And this is such a bad space to be. It's just not a place to grow a business. So on the other hand, if we can get this skill nailed and actually start coaching and not telling, what we end up with is some very different results, right?
Yeah. First one is they find the answers. Like, you're not the person that's sitting there saying this and saying that. Like, they actually start to become a lot more resourceful in the way that they think, and they improve. They find the way to achieve the result that you want them to achieve, no matter what you're getting them to develop in. And they tend to grow a lot more through this.
Yeah. And I think the big thing with this is that when you're helping them, you're coaching them, you're helping them find the answer rather than telling them. As a result, they own the changes that will happen. So rather than, you know, me saying, hey, Cam, you know, do this differently, say that differently, act differently, instead you are the one who's coming to that realization. And so you own that change, which means that you care about doing things differently and you actually follow through. So we start to, you know, see the benefit of these changes. And not only that, but your team starts to develop, right?
Yeah.
Everyone gets better. And, you know, sure, this is about being able to promote people and things like that, but it's also just about, you know, your team actually developing their skill sets and becoming better and better at what they do now. If I've got a team where I can't send Cam to a commercial job because he's useless at it, and I keep pointing out what he needs to do differently, but he just can't make the change, well, now this is one more job type I can't send Cam to. And, you know, turns out all you can do is dig holes, which is, you know, good when there's holes needing to be dug, but when there's not, it makes you a bit of a spare wheel. So
yeah, also people love winning. And when people are doing a good job and they're developing, they're getting new skills, they're getting better results, they'll actually love coming to work a hell of a lot more. Good attitudes breed good attitudes. And so you've got a happier team at the end of that too, because people are actually getting better at what they're doing, which is great.
Yeah, massively. And I think lastly, what happens is that results just skyrocket. Like, if your team can effectively make changes, it means that they can effectively improve. And if they can effectively improve, it means everything gets done better. What that leads to is it leads to less callbacks, less rework, you know, less money lost with all of these wastes, you know, that are going on. Leads to less mistakes, you know, with ordering and purchasing. It leads to less mistakes with scheduling. It leads to less mistakes across the board. And so basically your entire machine becomes tighter, becomes more efficient, becomes more profitable. That also creates time because there's not all the time that's been stuffed around, you know, fixing all the mistakes that have been made. And as a result, you can use that time for more jobs, for more profitable activities. And so you actually compound and compound and compound the better results. And this makes you more profitable, creates more time, creates more freedom, basically builds the business that you wanted in the first place. And fundamentally, you believe in your team. Mm. And if you believe in your team, you actually give them responsibility, they take on more, and you feel confident to hire more people to grow and to, you know, expand what you're doing. Because if you scale chaos, you end up with more chaos. If you scale a tight operation, you end up with a better and better result. So lot to be gained.
Oh, yeah.
So let's dig into, you know, why people don't listen. Like if we're telling and not coaching, which would be the bad way around, why does this not work?
Look, think about the whole life that somebody's lived before coming to work for you. They have been conditioned. Like as a kid, what you can easily learn is that the easiest way out of a lecture with mum or dad or a teacher, whatever, is to apologize and agree. Even if you're not sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you do disagree. So if you're not listening, it's just like, yeah, man, I'm sorry. Yeah, dad, I'm sorry. Mom, I'm sorry. I won't touch that phase again. All right. And you can kind of get to a point growing up that you believe that asking questions shows that you disagree or shows, I don't know, that you don't have the intelligence. And honestly, you're fighting this ingrained belief that they've learned their entire life.
That's right. And I think the hard thing is, if you really think back, if you're anything like me, you might have been in trouble a bit as a kid. Now, I can remember countless times when I was being told off or told to do something differently by parents, by teachers. Man, I've got like vivid memories of sitting in the principal's office getting told off. Do you know what I don't remember? Is what I was being told off about.
That's so true.
Because the thing is like I remember the telling off, and I remember, you know, very, very early on learning the way to get out of this is to look down at your feet.
Oh yeah.
Block your ears, because if you listen, you might disagree with something, and you'll prolong this situation. Just don't bite. Just sit there quietly, listen, fakely, and then when they get to the end of their rant, you go, "I'm so sorry. I'll never do it again." And they go, "Great." And then now I can leave. I can carry on living my life. I can get back to building that fort. I can get back to stuffing around in the back of the class. I can get back to eating my lunch under the desk. I can get back to whatever I wanted to do. But you know what I didn't do is I didn't listen, because listening prolonged the problem that I was facing at the time, which is that I was being told off.
Yeah.
And the easiest way out of that was just to agree, even if I didn't listen or understand. So I think the thing is you can't use the same input, the same framework again and again and again and expect a different outcome here. Yeah. Like you're dealing with, as you said, a super ingrained behavior, which is that people have learned that when they're being told off or told to do something differently, that the easiest way out of this problem, and remember the problem is that they're being told off in their mind, the easiest way out is just to agree regardless of what they think and then just carry on living. So we need to do things differently and use a different framework, or otherwise we're not going to crack through that belief, we're not going to crack through this behavior, and we're never going to see any change, which is why we coach and we don't tell. So let's talk about coaching. Yeah. Right? How do we go about coaching a problem rather than telling someone to do something differently?
I reckon we should break this down into a few steps. So the first step that you want to do is you want to label the problem or the opportunity, because what are we dealing with? We're dealing with somebody who's doing something in a way that you don't want them to do it, you want them to do it differently, or you're wanting to develop someone. So this really goes into any conversation of improvement of something, right? And it could be improvement around how they show up against the values. It could be an improvement around like a simple compliance thing.
Well, there's one thing that comes to mind straight away. Hey, we had someone come up for a client of the quarter at one of our recent client events, a boot camp.
Yeah.
You know, and they were talking about like process and how to streamline their operations. This person did kitchen renovations and you know, cabinetry. And they had realized that actually they wasted so much time when they're unpacking all of the cabinets to be installed that they're wasting so much time having to lay them all out and then figure out what was the best order to put things in. And as we all know, you put the corner in first, right? And so as a result, when you pack the trailer before bringing everything over to the job, you know, put the corner in last. Yep, whatever you're going to use last, put it in the trailer first. Yeah. All the way through to whatever you're going to use first goes into the trailer last. So the thing is this guy could tell his team, hey, put the corner in last. But you could end up saying that 200 times and they just forget, right? But they didn't forget. The reason is they didn't listen. Whereas if I label the problem, which is, hey, Cam, every time we get to site, we're spending ages having to, you know, put things in order before we can even start installation. What I've done is I've labeled the problem. The key is to not continue after that. Yeah. You get them to explain. So you label it, you just give it a name, and you get them to explain that problem back to you. So like, why is this a problem?
Yeah.
What's actually going on? What that does is it brings them into the problem straight away, and now it's me and you attacking the problem, not me attacking you, which becomes your problem.
So you're a team with them now.
That's right. So what do we do second?
Next thing that we've got to do is we've got to get them, this is the continuous tone of this, by the way, that they are doing a lot of the talking.
Oh yeah.
You've got to get them to explain the impacts of the problem. So in that example, it will be something along the lines of like, if we're putting things in the wrong order and it takes us a long time to actually get everything out or start the job, like, what does that lead to? And now they're forced to start thinking about the impacts of whatever problem is that you're dealing with.
You also get to catch them out on whether they were originally listening. Because remember, they've turned up thinking, I'm just going to nod and smile and probably apologize if the tone sounds bad. And then we'll carry on living our lives.
The nod and the head down probably wouldn't work in that case.
Exactly. Whereas if I'm asking you questions straight away, you very quickly realize, damn, I have to pay attention because I'm going to get asked questions.
Yeah.
So you can change the way that they're thinking about this from the start, because this becomes you interviewing them about how we could do it differently.
Yeah.
But we start by getting them to, we label the problem, they explain the problem, and then we ask them questions so that they will explain all of the knock-on effects, all of the, you know, after effects that will occur.
Yeah.
Because of this problem. So
let's talk about one really simple example, because every single person can relate to this: time cards, right? So you want your team to put in their time cards for every job that they go to or progress on a longer job. So if they don't do that, you're wanting to ask them questions like, who does this impact if you don't do your time cards? Well, it's going to be them after the fact, because they're getting chased by the admins. They might have to do it in the weekend or after work or something like that. It impacts the customer because they have no ability to pay because we haven't sent the invoice. It impacts the admin because they have to then chase you to then be able to go and invoice the client for the time that you're at the job. Blah, blah, blah. It's like,
it impacts you because your profit's decreasing because you don't know what was spent on the job. You don't know how much is it, you know, your margin on the job. You can't improve your pricing in the future. I mean, I think the thing is, though, is you got to get them to say
this
stuff.
They have to say it.
So you got to ask the question. So if you've done some thought in advance, you know, how would this problem play out? What are the knock-on effects? You can direct those questions to steer, you know, the conversation so that you get the answers you're looking for. You know, get them thinking about all these different effects. And what this does is, so far we've got them to really unpack this problem, and they have done it. And so what they're doing is they're actually building their understanding of, like, what are we really dealing with here and why is this a big issue?
Yeah.
Because if they don't see it as a big issue, or they don't believe that or buy into it, then they're not really going to care about making any change. And so they need to understand the problem, you know, explain it back to you, explain all of the flow-on effects, and as a result, they own the fact that this needs to be changed. So from there, what do we do?
Yeah, we've got to still them. We've got to get them to start exploring ideas or brainstorm solutions. So how can we solve this problem? And what you're looking to get them to think about is behaviors, not outcomes. So, I don't know, a real simple example is like someone showing up late to work and the ideas are, I'll just be on time. That's an outcome.
Yeah.
You know, a behavior would be to set their alarm clock for 6 a.m.
Right, exactly. Every day. It's like, what's the activity that you can do differently, the behavior you can do differently, not just the outcome that you want to be different? You know, if I say, hey, Cam, be more handsome, unfortunately, you're stuffed.
Oh, yeah, topped out.
Sorry, bro.
Maximum, you can't get any more handsome.
No, but seriously, it's like, you know, there are things where it's like, if I talk about the outcome, like, that's fine, that's great, but, like, what are you actually going to change? So, again, if I wanted you to be more handsome, it's like, maybe,
pluck your
hair, you know, a little bit better. I don't know. Actually, get it. Don't cut your own hair for once.
What the hell, man? Attacking me on the podcast?
No, just kidding. But hey, look, if we're serious, though, reality is that, again, I think this requires them to really think about not just, hey, I'll do the thing differently. It's like, what are you actually going to do differently to ensure that outcome arises?
Yeah.
You know, I think about this with anything, really. Like, you know, people say, I want to go for a run in the morning. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, you either go or you don't. But that's actually not true. Like, if you get your running shoes out the night before, you set them by the door, so that you know when you get up in the morning they're there.
Yeah.
If I've got my running clothes out, you know, set right by the bed, so that the minute I get up, that's what I'm going to put on. You know, if I have my headphones ready, so then I can't complain that I'm not going to have any music, and that's why I'm not going. They're charged. You know, like these are all things I can do to make sure that I'm creating the best possible likelihood that I actually follow through on the outcome that I want.
Yeah.
If I've pre-planned my route. So then, like, I don't know about you, but once I go for a run, if I leave the door, if I haven't pre-planned my route, I'm probably not running as far as I should have.
Absolutely.
Because after about a K, I'm like, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
So if I want to run 10, I need to plan the route or I'm not doing it.
I think putting this into practice, like, those are great examples of things that you can do. And it shows that there's lots of options to actually make sure that you get the outcome or you're way more likely to. But you want to start open with this, like let them just start exploring. Like what else is a great question to ask? I know it seems really simple, but people do have brains and they can think and they're in the job. Like they really can like put their brain into action. But if you really need to, and they're not getting to the answers, that you can lead them down a certain path. But if they still answer the question and not you just say, what about this? And give them the answer. It's a way better outcome for sure.
So they start to brainstorm these solutions and they're looking for the inputs, you know, the behaviors, not the outcomes.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then they choose the plan of attack. So they want to be the person, or you want them to be the person to commit to the plan. So if they're wanting to go for a run and they decide on all of those sorts of things and that's what they're going to do, then excellent.
Yeah.
They've decided on the plan, but they need to choose it. And you might need to steer them a little bit. And the way that I'd suggest, and what I mean by that is they might choose something that you are 99% sure won't actually help improve the outcome, right? Whatever it is. So, you know, if they say that the way that they're going to do their time cards every single time is to tell their mate that's in the van to remind them, and that's not a great option.
They're shifting their responsibility there.
Yeah, then you might need to push them for something different. Now, you would do that through asking questions still. So, like,
what if he doesn't remember?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's an easy way to start. And so you need to just ask them questions to realize that that's not a great idea or there might be a better option to choose.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're steering that plan and you're helping them to, you know, actually settle on the thing that's going to make the best difference. Now, obviously, if they've brainstormed correctly, they've got a bunch of different options. Most likely one of those is better than the others, or one or two of them. And so, again, you steer them towards the better ones, the better solutions. So from there, what we're going to do is we're going to finalize these. And this is something that we do together because there is two parts to this commitment. So we're going to finalize expectations of what's going to be done differently. We're going to finalize, you know, timeframes. When should we see these changes occur? We're going to finalize check-ins. So this is how often am I going to check in with you and how?
Yep.
And we'll finalize measurements. So how are we going to measure whether or not this is actually happening and actually making a difference? And so there's going to be two parts to this because number one is that they are going to make the changes. But number two is that you are going to hold them accountable in those timeframes, with those measurements, with the way that they want to be checked in. And so that's why you do this part together. Because as much as it's on them, you want them to make the change, it's on you as the manager to help them make that change stick. Because I think the really hard thing is that you're changing a habit, you're changing a behavior, and that is hard. They will slip up, they will make mistakes. And that doesn't mean they don't care or that they're not trying. It's because building a new habit is tough. It's not a one and done. It's something that takes follow-up until the habit actually sticks. And at that point, you can draw out. But you're going to have to be there. So there is this is a part that is really a together experience.
Yeah.
And I think what this does is that if we can go through this framework, this coaching and not telling, what we're doing is we're involving them the whole time throughout, you know, actually solving this problem. And they feel like they are solving it. And so that involvement, as we say, you know, all the time, is involvement breeds commitment. Yeah, right?
Absolutely. Look, the buy-in's there. That means they'll show up and they'll want to do it. That means they're way more likely to get a result. And they're listening the entire time, so you're mitigating that right from the start. Then there's a couple other things that you really need to do to really own this well. If it's something that can be practiced, like a skill gap, a part of this is doing the practice. So if you're working with your tradesman on a physical skill, like where you can practice, like do the practice. If it's a time cards thing, look, you can get them to do it with you in front of you a couple of times. And just think back to when you were trying to learn a sport as a kid. Like you're probably doing this with George at the moment, right? Like passing balls.
Yeah.
Talking about it doesn't actually get George better at passing the rugby ball.
No.
He actually has to do it.
Yeah.
So like anything, like repetition will improve the skill, it'll build confidence. And so you need to make that a part of this whole thing as well, coaching, not just telling,
because yeah.
telling's not going to get anyone better.
Yeah, well, if there's a part of the solution that's come up, you know, during while you coach them and not told them, if there's part of that solution which requires a skill improvement, something they actually don't know how to do yet, then a secondary thing is you're going to have to go and coach them on that skill. Like, I can't just tell you to get better at something. You do have to practice it, and that will take coaching and, you know, correction and actual, you know, feedback and things. If you're not putting that in, can't expect them to get better at it. And then I think finally from there is as they get better at the skill, or as they start to actually implement the changes that you're looking for in the first place, there's the whole thing of reinforcing. So you need to reinforce that behavioral change. And I think there's a really key caveat with this is that a lot of the time what we do is we praise. Hey, Cam, great job.
Yeah, attaboy.
Attaboy. Problem with that is that, you know, praise is a final thing. So I say, hey, Cam, attaboy, good job. Hey, Cam, I saw you, you know, did your time card. Well done. The hard part with that is it's final. It's like you did it or you didn't do it. You've got it now.
Yeah, but what do we want to do instead?
Right, whereas this is supposed to be a long-lasting change. I need to see you do this all the time. So am I going to praise you every single time?
That'd be stupid.
Right, and so what you don't want to do is create the sugar cube effect where, you know, like you train a horse, you give them a sugar cube when they did the right thing. Now I've got to give them a sugar cube every time. Are they going to stop doing it?
Yeah.
And it's the same as that in your mind, if I give you the attaboys, the well dones, the hard thing is that that's the sugar cube. And then next time, if I don't do it, you subconsciously go, oh, well, did I get that wrong?
Mm.
Or you subconsciously go, oh, well, Phil doesn't care about that anymore. One way or another, the hard thing is that this actually leads to you eventually dropping the behavior.
Yeah.
Whereas what I've got to do is I've got to encourage. So rather than praise, we encourage. And you know, encouragement is cumulative, not final. And instead of, hey, Cam, well done on doing your time card, it's, hey, Cam, I can see you've been putting lots of effort into your time cards and it shows.
Mm.
Now, do you notice that was not a final thing? You're not finished. It's just, I can see you've been trying. I can see you've been implementing the behavior and there's a positive effect of this.
Yeah.
Right. So, hey, Cam, I can see you've been putting time, you know, and effort into your time cards, and it shows. Hey, Cam, I really appreciate that you've been working on X skill.
Yeah.
You know, but what I'm doing is I'm not making it final, I'm making it cumulative. You still get the positive effect. There's still the reinforcement, but it's something that's never really finished. It's something that's stretching you. And so I think that's a real key, makes it stick a lot better.
Yeah, massive.
Sweet. All right. Well, I think we've gone over a really great framework here. Make sure that we are coaching and not telling. And I think we'll land this plane. So end of the day, if you've got stuff that you want to change in your business and your team is doing things that you would like to be done differently, try to break away from telling them what to do. Telling ultimately will lead to them not listening because they just want to get out of the situation. Switch to the coaching framework where we label the opportunity, get them to explain it, explain the knock-on effects, brainstorm the solutions, and finalize a plan of attack. And we're going to see much more long-lasting change and skyrocketing results. Exciting. So thanks heaps for listening, and we'll see you all again next time.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of The Profitable Tradie Podcast.